Simon for On the White, and we're in Ride, and we're with
Barbara Jane Mackey.
And Barbara, we spoke, last time we spoke to you was at the Apollo Theatre. It was we're right in the middle of the interval.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff going on around you for Rumpy Pumpy, which you put on in Newport for the first time.
Yes.
Now, big news.
Well, yeah, there is big news now for the show. We've been selected by the King's Head Theatre in Islington to showcase the show next March, April, which is really exciting.
So 2015.
We're doing three Saturdays there.
Right.
And then we're doing a run at the Landor Theatre in Clapham, which has a very good reputation for breaking new musicals, as it were. But obviously with the King's Head, you know, it's a very prestigious London fringe theatre, a very old London fringe theatre that everybody knows, everyone's worked at some point. So it's a great place because I can get, you know, people in the industry or, you know, hopefully some West End producers, et cetera, to come to the King's Head.
Yeah.
Because it has a great reputation.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, it's a place that people, there's been some great shows there.
Yeah.
And people know of it. I mean, it's a great thing to have on the show's CV, if you like,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's very exciting. That's a real boost. The other boost to the show is that I've got Arts Council funding.
Excellent.
Which means that I can recast with a professional cast in London. We're doing a mini tour, if you like. So we're doing here at the Medina Theatre at the end of this month.
With which crew is that? Which cast is that?
With the Island cast, a second Island cast.
Yeah.
Non-professional cast, but extremely high-level amateur cast. You know, we've worked extremely hard on this show. And there's 19 songs and singing and dancing and everything.
19?
Yeah, 19. Perhaps too many, I'm sure. But it's hard to cut them out when you've written them.
Right.
But we are going to have to lose a couple, of I think, probably by the time we take it to London. But we're doing it in the Medina, which is a huge theatre, as you know. So that's interesting. With a three-piece band, so we've got more music now. And then next year, as I say, early next year, because I've got the Arts Council funding, I can recast with a professional cast. But we're also going to take four of the Island actors with us to work with the professional cast. Because I'm very keen, you know, to give opportunities to people here on the island. And so those that want that experience, which several of them do and can take that experience, we'll be taking four or five Island actors with us to work with a professional cast and do the London run.
I mean, that is, for people who want to do acting, having that opportunity is great, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the ones that are saying they want to do it mainly are ones that probably want to become professional at some point. They're either going to drama school or that's what they want to do. So, yeah, it's very exciting, and exciting for them too.
I mean, I know what it is because I've seen the show, but maybe you want to give a quick overview because the storyline is quite unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
Locally based, you know, Solent.
Yeah,
based,
absolutely. But I mean, I wouldn't have written it. You know, I'm a scriptwriter by trade and I was writing TV scripts and developing TV work and worked for quite a long time at the BBC. But this was a local story that I picked up on and I saw a documentary about two ladies from the Hampshire Women's Institute, Jean and Shirley, who went on a worldwide tour to find the perfect brothel because they were so appalled by conditions on the streets and the danger of conditions on the streets for working girls.
In Portsmouth?
In Southampton, actually. They lived near Winchester.
Okay.
There was a documentary about them on Channel 4, which I saw. And they went to Amsterdam, then they went to Nevada, where prostitution is legal. And then they went to New Zealand, where prostitution is legal again, and they have self-owner-operated brothels, which means the women run it themselves. There's no pimps or madams, and it's all health and safety checked with a kind of hotline to the police.
So they weren't seeking to promote it, but they just acknowledged that it existed, and therefore, if it's going to exist, then people should have...
Yeah, I mean, they're not promoting prostitution. No one would promote prostitution, but what they're saying is there. It's never going to go away. It's the oldest profession in the world, if you like. Let's make it more safe for the women working in brothels. Because a lot of women in brothels, and I'm not talking about sex trafficking where people are forced into work. I'm talking about brothels where women choose to work there. I'm talking about quite female-centred brothels, really, where the women absolutely choose to work there. And a lot of women working in brothels are nurses, students, They had a social worker on their book. They had a policewoman on their book. The madame that I visited did. Very normal women, actually. A lot of young mothers, a lot of single parents, women with husbands who are disabled or on the sick. Women holding up whole households, actually.
On that one job?
Yeah, well, it's like their second income. For a lot of them, it's a second income.
Right.
And the money's quite a trap. I mean, that has to be said. And that all comes out in the
news.
It's
appealing to receive the money. Is good money? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, the brothel I visited, I mean, they're not all like this, I don't know, you know, but some are and some aren't. There's obviously some very bad brothels too. I visited a decent health and safety checked, quite female empowered brothel in Stockport. And all the women there were doing other jobs. I mean, an awful lot of nurses, because nurses are obviously very badly paid, and they're not squeamish.
Mm.
So they're used to anything.
Right.
And the men coming to the brothel were a veritable normal bus queue of men.
Right.
So the normality of it all really shocked me.
Mm.
You know, I was expecting something very, very different.
Yeah, right, yeah, because you sort of have a view of what it's going to be like, I guess.
You do,
yeah.
You do. You think all kinds of things, and you've seen films, and you imagine there might be red lights and curtains everywhere and things, and you imagine it'll be a bit odd and a bit like that. But it was so normal, it was shockingly normal to me. It was very...
Like going to a doctor?
Well, it was on an industrial estate.
Right.
You would not have known it was a brothel on the outside. There were slatted blinds. They could have been selling photocopiers.
Yeah.
And the reception was like that. I could have been sitting in a reception for a company that sold staples or photocopiers or something. It was so normal.
Mm.
You know, a desk, some chairs, a reception. And then there's two spotless rooms off the reception.
Mm.
And everybody knew each other. I mean, it was all sort of cups of tea and hello, Norman, and how's your arthritis and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Very chatty.
Right.
It was like sitting around with a bunch of nurses, because mainly they were nurses, actually, in this problem.
Wow.
But the money, I mean, in terms of the money people were earning there, some of them were earning about four grand a month.
Crikey.
I'm not saying everybody does. I'm not saying everybody can. But what I'm saying is, it is a second income.
Right.
And I think then the money does become quite a trap. So I think, you know, but people are there for economic reasons. And the police told Jean and Shirley, these WI campaigners who are still campaigning, they're campaigning for the decriminalisation of prostitution.
Okay.
Because they're saying, you're never going to get rid of it. We are the Women's Institute. This is a women's issue. We've got to make things safer for our daughters, our granddaughters, anybody who is working in prostitution, and invariably the younger women that are.
Right. Wow. And so that, I mean, that was obviously an interesting experience, unusual
I was sort of undercover, if you like.
Yeah.
I was pretending to be all the women, the women that working in the brothels and the madame knew how I was, and they were very pro the decriminalisation because they wanted it legitimised, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it means there'll be more health and safety checked, and it means there'll be more police protection, and there'll be the theory is that the madames and pimps will fall away, that any crime around it will fall away. Because at the moment everything's underground, so it's very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But what a brothel is, essentially, is... if two women work together indoors, because obviously it's very dangerous on the streets for anybody, it can be, obviously. But if those women, two of them, choose to work indoors, that constitutes a brothel.
Right.
That's what a brothel technically is.
Mm-hmm.
So the police said to Jean and Shirley, there's 800 illegal brothels in Hampshire alone, which means on the Isle of Wight, there could be hundreds.
Right.
I don't know, or 100, I don't know, anywhere. Brothels can be in a flat, in a, anywhere, in an industrial estate, in a house, anywhere.
Mm.
Anywhere, you wouldn't know.
So that was the research, but then you've turned it into a jolly musical.
Well, yeah, it was quite jolly, wasn't it? well, you know, I didn't, and this is the reason I called it Rumpy Pumpy, you know, I wanted to get people in, I don't want to turn people off the subject, because... You know, in some senses, some of it is quite dark as a subject. But I didn't really want to portray it like that because, you know, this is about, if you like, the musical is about female empowerment, because what happens in my musical at the end is that they do turn it into a self-owner-operated brothel, which is called a soob, and they have those in New Zealand, where the women run it themselves. No pimps, no madams, no one taking a cut, no one pressurising anybody to do anything. They don't
just
want
like
to do.
Just like renting office space, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or a house. I mean, the one that Jean and Shirley visited in New Zealand was like just a lovely little boutique hotel.
Right.
You know, immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
And, but safe, you know, and empowered. So I suppose this is a musical about female empowerment. I didn't want it to be, you know, it's not a, it's a comedy drama. Because also it's the reason it's a comedy drama is because there's a huge amount of hypocrisy around this subject. Because the police only raid brothels on their own in the next door county. They don't raid brothels on their, in their own county.
What's
because
that,
they are, here comes the joke, although it's a real joke, is because they could find the superintendent in there,
right.
Their superior officers, councillors, town councillors, etc., etc., and that's who would be there, might be there.
Right.
So they raid elsewhere. They don't raid in their own patch. So you can already see the hypocrisy around this.
So is that because they don't want to discover those people there, or because if they did, then there would be a professional...
All of that. It would be very awkward, huge pressure, embarrassment. So for me, you know, that already becomes a bit comedic. You know, that's, I've got some scenes like that in the show where people do discover each other there. And certainly the brothel in Southport, and the madame, she knew everybody. She knew the police, the town councillors. She was waving at them all. She was VAT registered.
Right.
The council knew she was there.
Right.
So you will find that a lot of these madames are actually built into the fabric of the town or city, the town where they live.
Wow.
So you do have that British hypocrisy thing, I think. You know, it's all not spoken about, but it's there.
Right. And so from there came 19 songs, 19 musical numbers.
Yes. Well, they didn't all come at once, I can tell you, Simon. It was a six-month period. I mean, I live in Ryde on the Isle of Wight, as you know, obviously I'm here. And I couldn't at the time... I mean, there are a lot of musicians here. There's some very talented musicians here, actually. There's some very high-level musicians.
Yeah.
And a lot of them live here, but often work away or tour or whatever. But I couldn't, when I was starting this, find anybody to work with that had the same musical taste. I knew some musicians, but you've got to have someone that, you know, wants to create the same kind of musical as you.
Yeah, I'm sure you come at it with, you know, you're sort of thinking of the tone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I grew up on musicals. My father was always taking us to musicals, so they're all in the back burner for me. You know, I've seen them all. I know them all. So they're there to draw on, if you like. But I couldn't at the time find anyone to work with. So I literally thought, well, you know, I'll have a go. You know, I really was not sure. But I will say, I don't want to promote the brand here, but if I hadn't had an iPhone, if I didn't have a smartphone, I wouldn't have been able in some ways to do it because there's a recording app on that.
Right.
Anybody can, well, any phone, any smartphone, you can download a recording app,
which
is a little thing. You have it on your little desktop and you can sing into it and record.
Right.
So that, you know, the intimacy
like
of that.
Like a dictaphone in the old days.
Yeah, like a dictaphone in the old days.
Yeah.
So the intimacy of that, in a way, got me going because it made it much more doable and easy to realise, you know. So I'd written the script first, so I had all the characters, I had the script. And I looked at the script because I had developed as a film script and I thought, actually, this is a complicated subject and I want people coming at it from all angles. So the women in the brothel and the madame and Jean and Shirley... they've all got different voices to sing with, so it'd be good to do it as a musical, so you have these different opinions coming in. So, you know, sort of, when you're writing, you know, you've got to be a part actor as well when you write, because you imagine yourself in the role as you write, and as you write songs for these characters, you know, you become this character. You think, what would this character sing? How would they sing, you know? What would they say? Obviously, those are the lyrics. And what tone would this have at this point in the story? You know, is this a poignant bit or is this a funny upbeat bit, or is this something about British hypocrisy here, or is this a slightly edgy piece? You know, so you do think about what tone, and then you think, what are they going to actually say in this song? Because in a musical you can get the inner voice, you know, that's what the songs are very good for doing. It's a good device. The action suddenly stops. Someone sings.
So what they sing in a... What does that mean then? They sing in a different way or they use different...
No. What I mean is when you have a song in a musical, often, I mean, if you look at something like West Side Story or something, oh, let's say, you know, one of those famous songs, Tonight or something, mm-hmm. sung by the hero, you know, Tony. Mm. Yeah, I think it was Tony, the hero, Maria and Tony. Yeah. Mm. And he sings about his sort of excitement about what's going to happen that night, where he's going to meet the girl and Maria and all that kind of stuff. And he sings a song about it. So musicals are very good for revealing people's inner thoughts.
Right, right.
You know.
Because it's him talking to himself.
Yeah.
So it's an inner dialogue.
Yeah. Then,
right, okay.
Yeah, it often can be. Mm-hmm. It often can be.
Right.
So it works well, actually. For me, it works quite well when you have a complicated subject like this.
So how's it been? Because I remember at the Apollo, there was somebody on keyboards playing.
Yeah.
So taking, that must be a whole new dimension where you have a three-piece band.
Yeah.
Because, well, there's more richness you can bring.
Oh, there will be. I mean, I haven't met all the band members. You know, we haven't quite got them together yet. We're only 2 weeks, but we'll be rehearsing very soon.
Do you think there'll be rewriting during that, or, you know, rescoring?
Oh, well, we've done a lot of rescoring.
Okay.
Over the months. Mm-hmm. Over the months. We've been at this for about 3.5 months now, which is not really very long. You know, I've got a 30% new cast.
Right.
A friend of mine who works in the Professional Theatre in London said, with a musical, with a full-time, everyday professional cast working every day on it, it would take about 6 months.
Wow, right.
So actually, we've worked and rehearsed 4 evenings a week, 5 sometimes, you know, an awful lot of rehearsals.
That's a big ask of those people as well, isn't it? The people on the show.
It is.
For them to give up.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, you know, they all knew when they auditioned, it was going to be a big climb, if you like. And, they're giving amazing performances. They're a very dedicated cast.
Mm.
Very dedicated cast.
So is that a challenge to find those people as well? Are the people that you think, oh, my goodness, they are just perfect for the role, but I don't know if their situation allows them to give that commitment or give that?
You know, with an amateur cast, obviously a lot of them are working. And sometimes people change jobs or situations over a period of time. Everyone does very different kinds of work. You know, there's a huge variety of people. There's 14 people in the cast. I mean, it was 23 people when you saw it. It's now 14.
Okay.
So that's better. But less people to manage. I mean, it is a big ask. And it's quite an exhausting show to do because there's a lot of songs.
Right.
But, you know, they're sticking in there. It's a very committed cast. The younger members, you know, several of the younger members, you know, I feel are going to go on to become professional dancers or singers or actors.
Mm.
You know, they're going to college next year and things. So the challenge is really to keep your cast together. That's difficult.
I was just thinking that's the other part is you have to identify people that are going to be able to be devoted, but equally you have to inspire them for them to devote themselves to you.
Yeah, it's a two-way process. I mean, I think a lot of the cast that came in on this, the same as last time, like the script. You know, I think the script always comes first. If they like the material, they get excited by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone has liked the script. Well, I mean, I've only met the ones that do like the script.
Right.
I don't meet the people that don't. But, you know, that's the first thing with actors, really, of any kind of actor, professional or non-professional, doesn't matter. What they're first seeing is the script. So if they like the role, they get excited.
Mm.
And I think what everyone has said about Rumpy Pumpy is that there's some great roles in it. So that's been the thing to draw in the actors.
How do you decide when you're doing the auditions? Do you say, right, today's the audition for part X? Or do you just audition everyone and say, oh, okay, right, I think I can see them in that role and sort of...
Yeah,
I do it all in one go?
To be honest, here on the island, there's an awful lot of word of mouth and building up contacts. You know, I ask around and people I know and... People say, oh, he'd be a good Father Jerry or something.
Okay.
Or she'd be a good Jean, one of the leads, she can really sing. So it's like a hunt. You know, I go on a search for people. I ring them, I email them, I Facebook them, and I say, come on audition, there could be a role for you.
Mm.
You know, because obviously the age range in this is huge. Some of the working girls are in their 20s, the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean and Shirley are meant to be 60 and 70.
Right.
So I approach different people to play different parts and then I invite them in.
Mm.
And then we just read. I read with them. You know, I read the other parts, they read the script.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask them to sing.
Yes.
Because it's a musical. Let's not forget. And obviously some people are stronger on the acting side than they are on the singing. Mm-hmm. And some people are stronger on the singing side, very confident.
Right.
And less confident on the acting. Mm. And some of them are extremely good dancers and might be less confident on the singing or something. Mm. So it was very... It's quite rare for anyone to be amazing at all three.
Right.
You know, these aren't people coming out of years of training in musical theatre companies or theatre
devoted
schools.
To it and prepared to put the time
Yeah, a lot of they yeah. are devoted, they are, and, mm. and we're nearly there, so it's an exciting period now.
Mm. So they, so that cast is going to play Medina?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, the Apollo is this beautiful, intimate venue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where it's almost like you're in a lounge. I don't know. It's,
yes.
It's that
a
feeling.
Great theatre.
So close.
Small, yeah.
Medina, very different, very big scale.
Very.
So do you have to stage it in a different way? Do you have to direct, do the actors have to work in a different way of, I don't know, more projection?
Yes, much more projection.
Grander hand motions?
Yes, I am saying all the time now, bigger hand motions, more projection. Mm-hmm. There's four, well, if we fill all the seats, I hope we will. You know, we're getting there. Project out, don't forget this side of the theatre, projection, mm. you know, sing out, project out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have mics as well, so that's good.
Yeah. Good, wow.
Mm.
So
come and see it.
Medina. Yeah, Medina.
Yes.
And then these two, King's Head.
Yeah.
The other one I didn't know about, the Clapham one.
It's the Medina
about.
Theatre on the 27th and 28th of this month. And then we're going to the King's Head Theatre in Islington mm-hmm. In March and April. We're doing two Saturday matinees and a Thursday matinee. And then we're going to the Landor Theatre. It's another pub fringe theatre mm-hmm. in Clapham in April for a week. We'll be there for a full week.
Right.
And then we come back to Portsmouth, New Theatre Royal, next
okay.
May.
Right.
So people can come and see us in Portsmouth mm. next May.
Mm. Nothing in Southampton then? You're not playing?
Maybe
no, that's to follow.
Really fine. I mean, there is somewhere in Southampton apparently, but obviously Southampton's got the huge Mayflower Theatre. Mm. It's a 700-seater, which isn't right for this. You know. That's your West End shows,
yeah.
receiving theatre kind of thing.
It's a big place.
Huge.
Yeah.
And the fringe theatre side of Southampton isn't really so developed, but there are some places up and coming there, I believe. So I think that's right. changing slightly.
Yeah.
But New Theatre Royal, I mean, I know the artistic director, Caroline Sharman, and she's one of the backers of this show, of Rumpy right. Pumpy. She saw it, she liked it. Mm. So she's offered us the newly built Minghella Theatre, named after Antonin Minghella, which is her studio theatre that holds about 120.
Where's that?
It's at the back of the existing New Theatre Royal, which is being refurbished at the moment, mm. and then they're building a studio theatre as we speak, which right. will be ready for next May.
Right.
And that's going to be very exciting.
Right.
So we'll be in a new theatre in Portsmouth.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because that was the one I remember there was bomb damage. No, it was fire damage,
yes.
wasn't it? Yeah.
No, I think it was bomb damage.
Was it bomb? Right.
Yeah, and the old New Theatre Royal.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they've knocked out the back and they've created another 200 seats. So that's going to be a 700-seater receiving theatre for West End musicals
right.
and all sorts.
Right.
Which is great for us, as long as they...
Because it sort of abruptly ended. It's still, the theatre was there.
That's right.
But then it's sort of, there's nothing behind
that's
the
right.
curtain, more or less.
Well, they've
there?
Sorted that all out
right.
and they're building a studio theatre on the back for more homegrown work like this.
Right.
For
very
a smaller
good.
Audience, 120 right. or something.
Yeah. And then just probably, you know, sort of 6 or 7 month run in the West End, I'd have thought. Is that
hoping, Simon. I'm hoping.
Yeah. Lloyd Webber on the phone.
Yeah. Ah, well, let's hope.
Can
let's
you do
hope.
It on roller skates?
Yes, do it on roller skates. That's a good idea. Excellent idea.
I don't know. You know, you're looking for acting talent and singing talent. Adding the roller skating on top maybe is the one step too
it
far.
It could be done on roller skates. Anything can. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're very optimistic and very positive. And certainly it's taken a huge leap to go to the King's Head Theatre in Islington, and that's very exciting.
Mm, mm. Brilliant. Well done.
Thank you.
We will continue. I mean, you know, we've been covering it
yeah.
since early days.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We'll continue to watch what happens with interest. It's interesting seeing sort of the seed of an idea from calls for
yeah.
people to come to auditions
yeah.
to being on the island and then growing
yeah.
from there.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Simon.
Well done.
Come along to the Medina.
Yeah. Thank you.